Well, I'm hearing other things in my headphones. I don't know about you folks, but it's, I guess it's oral multitasking day today here at the Le Show Dome. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, it's so much easier to, who was it that recently said it? It was the Taliban, wasn't it, that said it's much easier to destroy things than to build them? Just before they destroyed the two big Buddhas in that city, we're talking about Afghanistan, in that place. Anyway, yes, it is so much easier to destroy things than to build them. So let me do the hard work today and try to help. I don't recalling back in my high school days in the when you took those tests to kind of steer you where you needed to go in life. What were those called? Anyway, I don't think I ever really scored that high on helping people. But the predictive power of those tests is dubious anyway. So here I am trying to help. This week, President, and again, the air quote, President George W. Bush, delivered his long-awaited energy policy. And to the surprise of no one, it immediately began proving the political, handicap of having two oil men in the presidency and vice presidency is becoming apparent much quicker than even the most avid Democrat would have hoped, thanks to high gas prices and the electricity thing we're going through here in California. By the way, today's edition of Le Show is a wind-up show. We're actually winding it up while we do it. But anyway, President Bush, as I say, announced his energy policy this week, and one of the big components, some would say the only component, but no, one of the big components was more power to the people. President Bush called for an increase in nuclear power. Now, you know, nuclear power has been stalled for a number of years by these pesky protesters and these environmentalists. And whatever you think of their tactics, there is even Vice President Dick Cheney on this morning's Meet the Press had to acknowledge that there was a lingering question regarding the matter of the waste material produced by nuclear power plants. They're advertised as the cleanest, safest form of power, and then in very small print, except for the waste that lasts 10,000 years. And that produces weapons-grade plutonium can be extracted. So there's a security issue as well. It has to be, the waste has to be stored, and it has to be stored someplace where Saddam Hussein can't send some people to get it and extract weapons-grade plutonium. Now, the plan was to bury it in Yucca Mountain in Nevada. And the only problem really with that so far has been that nobody in Nevada wants it, and the Congress won't approve it, and aside from that, it's a fine plan. And meanwhile, the nuclear plants in operation keep producing this waste. So, ladies and gentlemen, as I say, in an attempt to help out, I have a very large listening audience. And I know a lot of you in urban areas may not have a lot of space, maybe you have space for a little garden or something. But we have a lot of listeners, we have a lot of stations, at least, in Alaska and in the Dakotas, a lot of people out there in the rural areas. You know, you've got a good piece of land around you. So just all it would take really is one or two listeners volunteering their property to bury some nuclear waste for about 10,000 years. Would you just please help your friends and neighbors by volunteering your land to be a nuclear waste repository? Just send your waiver of any rights and responsibilities and problems that you might encounter to me here at the Le Show Dome. 1900 Pico Boulevard, Santa Monica, 90405. I'll pass it on to the people in charge, and we'll get this nuclear waste we'll get this nuclear waste licked once and for all. Hello, welcome to the show.
Hear my friends. far to you are.
As a rule, but I know you read your magazines. You probably heard my name. Reading all your magazines, following my fame. Baddest thing I ever done was just to be a fella. That didn't seem to work with you. What happened to your mother? But you don't need this can of beans, so get back to your magazines. Check what's on page 92. There's a recipe for loving you. It's a cooking little recipe. All you're needing is a fellow. Why couldn't that boy be me? I'm as mellow as a cello, but I want to know how come my cello don't play for you. It needs to play your Ickes Blue. They don't play a song a day. I might as well throw the thing away. I might as well throw the thing away. You're still looking at my darker side, the side I never denied, but I'm changing every day. And you're still picking on my weaker points, and I've been loosening up my joints to make my cello play. Where you getting all that stuff you read? Round the corner do your shopping. Sounds like some kind of basic need. That would really get you hopping. You can hop on this, I know. You're recognizing me. I'm on page 12 and 43. Got the music, so just relax. I play my cello to the max. I've got to play my cello for you. It needs to play your Ickes Blue.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this, well, welcoming you to every edition of the show, whichever one you happen to be listening to at the moment. I happen to be doing this one, so that's the one that was on my mind when I launched my welcome. Hey, what's Rupert Murdoch been doing lately to kiss the ass of the Chinese, you ask? Dateline Hong Kong, News Corporation Chairman Rupert Murdoch, who hopes to expand his satellite television activities in China this week through his support behind China's bid to host the 2008 Olympic Games. Those will be known as the Tiananmen Square Olympics, I'm sure, or the Child and Prison Labor Olympics. But Rupert's forum, quote, for 2008, I think it would be wonderful if Beijing had it for many reasons, if only the added incentive it would give to the people in Beijing to clean up the environment faster. He's an environmentalist, ladies and gentlemen. I didn't get that memo. I thought it was follow the money. He's a greenie. Rupert the greenie. Rupert speaking by video link up from New York. Wish I'd had been tapped into that. Said he was pleased with the campaign. He's also expressing sympathy. He felt sorry for his old rival, Ted Turner. You know what kind of tears these are, don't you? That's right. Don't put your hand in the water. When you read interviews with him and you can see his frustrations, you can't help but feel rather sorry for him. But he's still only 62. He's got great energy. He's got ideas, not many that I would agree with. You'll hear more from Ted. He'll do something. Unquote. Murdoch, 70, remains firmly in control of an expanding global empire, according to Reuters, not owned by him yet, and is expected to become a father for the fifth time sometime around year end. Hey, Wendy Deng! That's all I'm going to say on that subject. Wendy Deng, ladies and gentlemen. Speaking of the Olympics in China. In the you can't win for losing department comes this story from Australia. Health authorities are investigating the deaths of 9 Australians to establish whether their use of the controversial anti-smoking drug Zyban was a contributing factor. Unprecedented demand for the drug has been accompanied by a surge in the number of adverse reactions being reported. The Therapeutic Goods Administration, that's a nice name for a government agency, the TGA, recognized, according to the Australian press, as one of the world's top regulatory authorities, has been monitoring the drug since its release in November. 9 deaths reported of people who've been taking Zyban, including one person who'd stopped taking it. Well, that's why you died. In addition to the report, I'm not laughing at death, please. In addition to the reported deaths, there have been 400 to 500 adverse reactions, considered high, in the past 6 weeks alone. Despite the death rate, the TGA does not regard the toll as excessive. What we need to keep in mind, says Dr. John McEwen of the TGA, is that the reason this drug is being used is because these people are smokers, and that is a risk factor for some of the deaths. Okay, so either it's the smoking or it's the thing you're taking to stop smoking. That's reason, ladies and gentlemen, to just sit there and be stunned into some form of stasis, I would imagine. Now, we're here in California, where we're having this energy thing. As I say, you can hear the wind-up. Because they have wind-up radios, you know. They've been selling these wind-up radios for years for use in the third world. So we figured here at La Show, why not have a wind-up radio show and just wind up the whole, you know, the whole chain, start to finish. But we're not. Anyway, the energy crisis here in California has resulted in one welcome revival. It's a linguistic one. You may remember that the last time the word scheme was used in our political discourse, it was Al Gore denouncing George W. Bush's proposed tax cut as a, quote, risky tax scheme. And he said it, I think he said it every time he woke up. And that wasn't often. But the Republicans lampooned Al Gore. You may remember, I think in one of the debates, George W. Bush even lampooned him and started riffing on the whole risky scheme theme. Now the word scheme, in that kind of meaning, that derogatory sense of scheme, the Brits use the word scheme just to mean plan, but we here understand it to mean something nefarious. That's being revived by the Republicans, who have taken to describing or reinterpreting what happened in California under the administration of Pete Wilson, the former governor, which was advertised at the time as energy deregulation. That's how it was sold. It was sold as that and guaranteed price electricity rate decreases. Guaranteed. Sounds weird now, doesn't it? That's how it was sold, a deregulation that guaranteed our rates would go down. So how are the Republicans describing that plan now? Dick Cheney this morning, and I think also the Energy Secretary Spencer Abraham, who does need to lose a little weight, both described it as a California's goofy regulatory scheme. It's a scheme now, and it's regulatory. The reason it's described as regulatory is because in the deregulation, the utilities were required to sell off their energy generating plants, basically to all the people in Texas who are now making money hand over fist. And they were prohibited from buying, making long-term contracts for electricity because at that time the day-to-day market price was so low. I still think we got to get the author of that, whether it was deregulation or a goofy regulatory scheme, former State Senator Steve Peace, and just put him on television every day until he can explain it. That'll be a while. That's a guarantee, ladies and gentlemen, that will last longer than the guarantee of decreased electricity rates. My favorite news story of the week, however, is from this. from this. It is this. An increasing number of American men, fearful of a wave of layoffs, are trying to put their best chin forward at work by getting an implant. Doctors say that strong chins have become a status symbol on Wall Street. Chinless wonders are turning up at doctors' offices to ask for implants that will give them confident, well-sculpted chins. Brent Milken, a California plastic surgeon who counts dozens of Hollywood stars among his clients, oh, Brent, said that he was not surprised by growing demand for chin implants. People with weak chins in the media are portrayed as embezzlers or as having weak characters, he said. So a strong chin is very important. This has spilled over from film to industry, with executives and even now salesmen who feel a strong chin would enhance their credibility. The procedure costs as little as $2,500, takes only a couple of hours. Patients can be back at work the next day. The operation is often accompanied by neck liposuction to enhance the jawline. Yeah, I want them screwing around with my neck.
I slipped.
Dr. Mulkin said he'd performed countless... Now, wait a minute. He's a California plastic surgeon, but he's identified in this news story as Mr. Mulkin. Why would that be? Brent? He's performed countless chin implants modeled on film stars. Michael Douglas is very common, he said. You're telling me. It used to be Cary Grant or Clark Gable. He knew of a television reporter whose career was dramatically improved by a chin implant. He had a bit of a weak chin, the doctors. Oh, now he's a doctor. The doctor said, I guess they were listening to the broadcast. He had a chin implant, and right after that, he signed a lucrative contract. That can't be coincidence. What's the reporter's name? Brent, call me. Tell me, please. And can we store some nuclear waste at your house, by the way? Cosmetic surgeons say that taken in profile, women's chins should fall just short of a vertical line, drawn down from the lower lip, balancing the nose and mouth without elongating the upper face. For men, however, an ideal chin is one that approaches the vertical line from the lower lip. Aren't you glad you didn't ask? Now you know the ideal line for a man's chin. And how, count the apologies. I'm counting, I've heard one so far from Tony Snow, a conservative columnist who's also on Fox News. Since it became known that the departing aides of the Clinton-Gore administration did not vandalize Air Force One and the White House. Did you hear this? This was released Friday, so it would have been Saturday's paper, the least read paper of the week. I don't know why it was released on Friday. It's the new administration. They do what they want. President Clinton's aides did not vandalize the White House, scrawl lewd notes, or steal presidential trinkets as they departed and the Bush administration moved in. You remember how big that story was right after the air quote president was sworn in? The General Services Administration, which investigated the alleged misdeed, said the rumors were unfounded. The condition of the real property was consistent with what we would expect to encounter when tenants vacate office space after an extended occupancy, the GSA said in a statement. Here is a quote from the time, from back of the day, back when that story was first being spread that the Clintonistas had vandalized the White House. This was from, I believe, the New York Daily News. Quote, "The destruction was so vast that a telecommunications staffer with more than a quarter century of service was seen sobbing near his office one night last week." Unquote. I don't know where that would come from. The destruction was so vast. This is the destruction now being reported as non-existent. So why was he sobbing? Onions? You tell me, department. Anyway, as I say, the one person has so far weighed in with an apology for the big wrongitude on the destruction of stuff at the White House. We'll keep a file open. And any further apologies that flood in, ladies and gentlemen, you'll be among the first to know.
The odds were 100-1 against me. The world thought the heights were too high to climb. But people from Missouri never incensed me. Oh, I wasn't a bit concerned. far from history I had learned how many, many times the worm had turned. They all laughed at Christopher Columbus when he said the world was round. They all laughed when Edison recorded sound. They all laughed at Wilbur and his brother when they said that man could fly. They told Marconi wireless was a phony. It's the same old cry. They laughed at me wanting you, said I was reaching for the moon. But oh, you came through. Now they'll have to change their tune. They all said we never could be happy. They laughed at us and how. But ho, 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 who's got the last laugh now? They all laughed at Rockefeller Center. Now they're fighting to get in. They all laughed at Whitney and its cotton gin. They all laughed at Fulton and his steamboat, Hershey and his chocolate bar. Ford and his Lizzie kept the laughers busy. That's how people are. They laughed at me wanting you, said it would be hello, goodbye. But oh, you came through. Now they're eating humble pie. They all said we never get together. Darling, let's take a bow. For ho, 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 who's got the last laugh? Ha, 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 we'll have the past laugh. Ho, ho, who's got the last laugh now?
You, this is Le Show. Yeah, sure it is. What else would it be? Ladies and gentlemen, some fine, fine digital news for you. In an effort to speed the rollout of digital television, just speed it along from that pokey pace that it's proceeding at present, the Consumer Electronics Association announced this week that the majority of digital television manufacturers have endorsed the Digital Transmission Content Protection System, DTCP. No, it doesn't protect your teeth against decay. For protecting content transmitted across the, what we know as the FireWire interface from one digital device to another. DTCP, also known as 5C, for the five companies that sponsored its adoption, is an encryption and authentication technology that can be used to protect content as it's being transferred over a digital connection, such as from a DVD player or set-top box to a TV set, or from a set-top box to a recorder. You get it? They've now adopted a system to control whether or how many recordings you can make of a TV show in the new digital wonderland. They've adopted that. It's in. It's in this. It's now here to speed the transition, you see, because they want to control it. They couldn't control it before, and now they can. So switch to digital and be controlled, won't you? Quote, broad endorsement of DTCP by digital television set manufacturers is an important step to help facilitate and speed the transition to digital television, says CEA President Gary Shapiro. That the CEA is the Consumer Electronics Association. They're the people who make the hardware. We believe that a commonly accepted copy protection system will be a major factor in facilitating the rollout of digital television via cable. No reason to believe why that would be. And here's here you always put the real thing at the end of the sentence, though, because people's eyes have glazed over already. Here it is. And ensuring that content providers make high-value content available to the cable industry. DTCP is also gaining momentum in Hollywood, confuse those two towns for a moment. Two major studios, Sony and Warner Brothers, already have agreed in principle to support it. Yes, I would believe they would be. Gives them the right to control how many copies or whether you can make any copies of a program, a movie, anything that you get out of your digital set-top box and into your digital TV or into your digital recorder, don't you see? Think you do. Think you get it. Other great digital news. Remember when CDs were being sold to us as the ultimate in sound quality and virtually indestructible? Well, we've learned since that they're not virtually indestructible. Now, we learn that they're not the ultimate in sound quality. Two new systems, two new digital systems for recording sound and selling it to you are vying for consumer acceptance. And yes, they are not compatible. Super Audio Compact Disc. Super. It must be better. It's super. And DVD Audio. They both use discs that look like CDs. And they both record music at a much higher quality than ordinary CDs, which, of course, are the ultimate in sound quality, and virtually indestructible. So, if that works, you'll have the opportunity to buy the same old music all over again another time. Don't thank me. Thank the industry. Ladies and gentlemen, news was made this week in Utah, where Tom Green, not the star of Freddy Got Fingered, not that Tom Green, he got his own punishment. No, another Tom Green was the first person in 50 years, approximately, who's counting, found guilty of violating the bigamy laws in the United States. He was prosecuted not for bigamy, but for polygamy. But in Utah, there is no law against polygamy. There is a law against bigamy. That's big of them. He's a man who's gone on television a lot to brag about the fact that he's got five wives. He's been on Oprah and Dateline and all that. And tapes of those appearances were played in court. So he didn't deny that he had the five wives. Tom Green's defense was, we weren't married. They're my spiritual wives. I think he has 29 children or something. Anyway, the prosecution fairly cleverly united the bigamy laws with the common law marriage law to say, oh, you know, you're married. He's married, ladies and gentlemen of the jury. And the jury, as I say, found him guilty. He could spend, I think, as much as 25 years in prison. That's 5 years for every wife. That pause was just for the married men out there to make their own remarks, make their own witticisms. The sentence will be handed down this week. But I think we haven't heard the end of this story. I mean, Tom Green, whatever his sentence he gets sentenced to, you know, he'll fade from the headlines, but maybe not from the primetime schedule.
Love and marriage, love and marriage.
Marriage with children was never like this.
Hey, sweetheart, what's for dinner?
Meatloaf. Pizza.
Would you believe frozen waffle?
Yakov Brown is a regular guy with a regular job and a beautiful wife.
Mr. Brown, welcome to the PTA.
Thank you. What an association.
Yes, and this must be...
I'm Brittany.
And a beautiful wife.
I'm Whitney.
And a beautiful wife.
I'm Brandishwa. How you doing, girl?
Too much passion is not enough.
Three may be company, but four is definitely a crowd. From the creators of the Don Imus Late Night Pilot comes a show that takes family comedy where it's never been before.
Well, good night, honey.
Good night, dear.
Good night, darling.
Yo, sugar, where's the remote?
Yakov Smirnoff is Yakov Brown. Tori Spelling makes her comedy debut as wife number one. Supermodel Shalale Ban is wife number two. And Brandy is Brandishwa.
Do you have the batteries?
I thought you did.
Hey, girlfriends, shh, don't wake him up.
And if you do... please let me watch. What a marriage.
Honey, 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 I'm home. Polygamy gets an attitude. Because this fall, everything's Fox.
Too much passion is not enough.
sensatez, justiça e muito amor. Netos de boa herança, frutos da sã loucura. Fortes, sadios, lindos, pretos, brancos ou índios. Os meninos do Brasil pedem para desfilar. Césio, lá de Goiânia, adora, brilha no escuro. Nana, que é de Belém, só brinca em cima do trem. Lívia e Mirieve, surfam só nas enchentes. Luizinho do São Carlos treina pra ser avião. Jorge faz seu preparo correndo da repressão. Nina lá de Carangola limpa o nariz com cola. Chico, Tadeu e Davinho se divertendo arrastão. Só Lima voltou pra casa, quer mais filhos com seu pai. Todos estão felizes, estão na televisão, estão em todo jornal vendendo só bom humor. São parte desse bolo, querem parte desse bolo. São meninos do Brasil, tem a cara do Brasil, o jeitinho do Brasil. Estão querendo desfilar e arrasar no carnaval. Deixa lá,
hoje. Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for me to read the trades for you. I know I delayed it as long as possible, but that time has come. From Meat Marketing and Technology Magazine, MMT, as the ingredient world turns, I'll read it for you. What's ahead for formulated meats? I know that question was top of mind for you today. Packaged meats, including emulsified meats and lifestyle foods, will experience major changes in both concept and product development as a function of the many innovative solutions that address production, economic, and sensory requirements. Manufacturers of processed meats will sooner or later have to face a dilemma, a crossroads, so to speak. In the future, formulated meat, poultry, and lifestyle foods. Love those lifestyle foods. Sorry. We'll also demonstrate a shift to nutrition management as micro ingredients are added to meat or vegetarian foods to improve their nutritional profiles, enhance their digestibility, support antiviral and antimicrobial activity, and incorporate the use of cryostabilization compounds such as polydextrose. Pass the polydextrose, please. One such example is the use of dietary antioxidants such as dried plums. They're talking about in meat. Functional ingredients, including isolated soy protein, provide organoleptic benefits such as moisture retention and flavor and texture enhancement. The ongoing effort to lower food costs has forced many processors to lower quality specifications with a subtle degradation of sensory product characteristics. Middle-of-the-road quality will likely disappear in the future, and those products will be forced to reposition themselves at either the upper or lower end of the price spectrum. The future will increasingly be dominated by so-called convenience foods, in which, quote, health, unquote, that's their quote, need not always be translated into nutritionally superior foods. Increasingly, people will start looking for no-brainer foods, and it can be expected that a growing connotation of perceptual satisfaction and self-esteem needs to be communicated. And in the future of formulated meats, also from the same publication, interactive technologies that combine functional ingredients, including flavors, colors, and aromas, have the potential to become new benchmarks for food product engineers. In these situations, the once dominant meat sources have almost completely lost their importance. This lack of typical characterization and identification of processed meats, didn't we used to call it mystery meat? Yes, we did. Back to this story. Provides opportunities to create innovative foods that drift away from traditional ethnic preferences. Cross-cultural foods need to be developed for coming generations, who will ultimately show little or no connection to their foods, to the foods that their grandparents once ate. Meat manufacturers can either search for the road of continuing demands for the current meat and poultry products, or they can open up to diversification and to positioning new concepts as segmented products targeted to specific consumer needs. Mm-mm. Is your mouth watering yet? It's often the result when I read the trades for you. It's a copyrighted feature. Stay tuned for another copyrighted feature coming next.
From CPR, Continental Public Radio, this is Book Bag. Book Bag, chit and chat about the fascinating world between the table of contents and the index. I'm Ira Zipkin in Washington. Nothing delights the publishing business more than a book that has progeny. A volume that has the popularity or resonance to inspire a sequel or sequels is like a publisher winning the publisher's clearinghouse. Think of the Chicken Soup series, the Four Dummies series, and the impending book mega-merger, the Chicken Soup for Dummies series. Our guest today may well be on the way to what we might call his own successful tribe. Tom Brokaw is best known as the respected, if perpetually boyish, anchor of the NBC Nightly News, but he's recently been spending as much time on the bestseller list as at the anchor desk. Starting with his book of memoirs by the folks who lived through World War II, The Greatest Generation, he's had two successive books on the subject of the World War II-era population cohort rocket up the lists. And now he's back for more. Tom Brokaw, welcome to the Book Bag.
Well, thank you, Ira. I don't know whether I can live up to the perpetually boyish description.
Or live down to it.
There you go.
Tom, you're fascinated by what you call the greatest generation, which a lot of people in our audience may just think of as our parents.
Well, exactly. And I think that's a lovely irony of this phenomenon. I'm a part of a generation that scorned our parents theatrically and passionately.
Yes.
Now I'm selling their parents back to them. In a way, I'm the vessel for a massive acknowledgement of a long overdue debt.
What of the debt?
Acknowledgement.
Oh, precisely. And your peers as readers are responding in record numbers, certainly. More than are flocking, let's say, to the recent book-length works of Rather and Jennings.
Well, we're not in competition here. Yeah. These are all labors of love. You know, Peter's last book was just basically, here's the last 100 years, hope you enjoy them. And Dan, I don't know what Dan was doing exactly, but I think The Greatest Generation was more than an idea. You know, it's almost, if you start to think of it in broader terms, it's almost a brand.
In the sense that it can be applied to a great number of projects?
Exactly.
Hmm?
Exactly.
Exactly, right. Mm-hmm. So this would explain what you're working on now?
Yeah. We basically used up all the memoir-type material.
The recollections of little moments of tragedy and bravery.
Uh-huh. But I felt that the greatest generation had more lessons to offer on all of the, you know, the big questions in life that readers have. Questions like, how can I improve my management skills? Or, how can I take weight off and keep it off? So The first two follow-on books.
I'm sorry?
Follow-on books. Follow-on are books. Management Secrets of the Greatest Generation and The Greatest Generation Diet. And I'll tell you, Ira, I've never had more admiration for these men and women who in all humility created the world we live in than when I was trying to think of what their management secrets or their diet would actually be like.
Actually be like.
That's right.
And without giving away the store, what would they be like?
Well, you have to remember, we're talking about people who were the children of the Depression.
Good point. And?
Well, just that you have to remember that. You know, for starters.
Right. So...
Well, that's really as far as I want to go. And
I understood. Mrs. Jennings and Rather might be listening.
No, really, Ira, we only compete on the air. And Dan not even really there anymore.
Looking ahead, Tom, what else might the Greatest Generation have on its mind?
Well, we're compiling the 100 Greatest Travel Destinations of the Greatest Generation. That'll be a beautiful book, lavishly illustrated, probably Christmas year after next. And since most of the books in this series are bought by the members of the Greatest Generation themselves, some for them to give as gifts to their kids, you know, something to read about themselves. An associate of mine, a young man who was an intern at NBC, is working on the first draft of The Greatest Generation Learns Computing, which would be a step-by-step guide lavishly illustrated with some wonderful photographs of these amazing veterans of World War II sitting at little tables and learning to use, Word 2000 or the like.
Or the like, sure. Well, Tom, I know our audience is looking forward to all of these projects, and who knows, one day maybe a chicken soup for the Greatest Generation.
It's unlikely, Ira. I don't want to cheapen the thing.
Well, thank you for the visit.
My pleasure, and the Greatest Generation sends their best.
Oh, thank them. Support for Book Bag comes from the Pagination Foundation. Page numbers make the difference. Next time, more questions and answers about life between the covers. Until then, I'm Ira Zipkin, climbing out of the Book Bag. This is CPR, Continental Public Radio.
Is my
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're in Southern California, where Rodney King's question has been answered. Yes, Shaq and Kobe can all get along. All right. And that will conclude this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the Armed Forces Network, Eddie's boys and girls, on shortwave at WBCQ The Planet at 7.415 megahertz, and on your computer whenever you want it in two locations. It's co-located, ladies and gentlemen. For your convenience at www.kcrw.com or www.harryshearer.com. And information on the music played on this broadcast is now once again available at www.harryshearer.com. Got confused with the dots there. And it would be just like Rupert having the exclusive rights to the Olympics in China, if you'd be able to join me then, would you? All righty, thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. You can volunteer your property for nuclear waste storage, but no attachments, please. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.